Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 31st of October, Anno Domini, 2015, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David.
And I'm Steve Ray.
I won't even try to come close to that.
Yeah, you think I'm going to do that the entire 2 hours? You're out of your little mind. At 6 minutes after the hour.
Very good, though.
Thank you very much. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things that you use. Nothing loose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. First, before we get into the news at all, two important announcements. First and foremost, the station did make its $50,000 thanks to an amazing push at the end of Friday. We were significantly below goal, and through an amazing push, we did make the goal. All on none of that corporate nonsense, none of that, you know, somebody's got a last minute $50,000 donation, that sort of fare. It was all due to the regular contributions from you folks. And so, for those of you who did become part of the Soundbites family and the Jazz 90.1 family, from the bottom of our hearts, we give you our sincerest thanks. And for those of you who didn't, you get to freeload for another 6 months. Congratulations. And the second thing is there were a series of life incidents that prevented us from once again getting Soundbites moved to the new server. So I haven't updated the the poll of the week. But as for the rest of it, hopefully we'll get it moved shortly. All right, our story this week, our head story, looks like Google. Well, this is one of those stories, there's a pro and a con, so wait till the end. Looks like Google will kill off Chrome OS, folding it into Android, according to Deep Throat sources. Chromebooks will get a new name in 2017. Google engineers have been working for roughly 2 years to combine the operating systems and have made progress recently. It expects to show off an early version next year. This move is long awaited. Chrome OS was Google's effort to bring a browser-centric experience to more devices, but Android only worked when software and apps were downloaded. As mobile device and app usage soared, Android prevailed. Both are Linux-based operating systems. They support apps in different ways, but share the same foundation. Both have their own strengths they could bring to a merged smartphone, tablet, and desktop operating system. Alas, while the marriage license may be signed, the actual release date is still over a year in the future. While Chrome OS and Android operate in separate arenas, their interconnection and convergence have been signaled since Sundar Pichai took over management of both in 2013. Android does not scale properly into larger devices, but Chrome does not scale properly into smaller devices. However, no sooner did this story actually break than a half a dozen people at Google, including the heads of both the Android and Chrome OS operating systems, took to Twitter to say, no, that's not at all true. Both there's a firm commitment to Chrome, a firm commitment to Android, blah, 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 blah. So who knows who's true, who's right. It is certainly likely that they are at least working on, if not ready to announce, that Android apps will work on Chrome. And that may be where the heart of this story originated. But we'll see. At any rate, if you want to talk about either operating system, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. It's an interesting thing because in terms of Chrome, the Chrome OS, they're beginning to sell an astonishing number of Chromebooks into schools. They have an interesting package where you buy a bunch of Chromebooks and an Android tablet, and then the tablet controls the Chromebooks. So it's a very cool school management thing, and it's pretty nice, and they've done a very good job with it. And like I said, they're selling them in record numbers. And so I'm not entirely sure why anybody would then kill the operating system, except that they have talked about making it more compatible with Android so that you could run the same apps, for example, on your Chromebook that you run on your Android phone. So I'm not sure how all that's going to play out. I suspect that it will result in Chromebooks with more memory and bigger hard drives, which means they'll be more expensive until the economy of scale. Any of my students who are listening, probably tired of hearing me use the term economy of scale. But there it is. And so that's, I think we'll see that in the future. It's an interesting idea as to how it actually ends up happening. I don't know. And before we go to the phones, just a reminder that we have, wow, that's interesting. That we have the YouTube channel is almost up. It was up a moment ago, and then it went down. And
well, it's the audio is up. I'm working on the video.
Okay. We have not only are we live over the air, we're also live streaming at jazz901.org. We're on our YouTube channel at Soundbites Radio. And those of you who follow me on Twitter know that we are also on Periscope at Nick Francesco. So if you follow me on Twitter at Nick Francesco, you will get a link to the Periscope feed. There are a couple of people on already. Nobody seems to be talking to me there. I'm not sure what that's about, but
you wouldn't listen anyway.
I won't. I don't like anybody anyway. All right, our first caller is Donna from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Donna. What's up?
Yeah, hi. I have a MacBook Air, and I don't know if it's Chrome-related or not, but it continuously, like almost daily, says Chrome shut down unexpectedly because of a problem, and then it restarts by itself, and then I get this message to send to Apple. So is that Chrome-related, or is it hardware-related?
I have to step back. What is your device?
A MacBook Air.
MacBook Air. Okay. You're using Chrome as your browser.
Mm-hmm.
And Chrome shuts down every day.
Yeah.
What I would suggest you do to start with, it is very possible that something happened with your Chrome system. So the first thing I might suggest is that you completely remove Chrome from your system and re-download it. Now, the problem with that is you're going to lose all your bookmarks and stuff.
That's fine.
Okay, then let me suggest you do that. You can also, there is a bookmark manager, and through that you could save all your bookmarks and bring them all back again.
Well, don't they sync to your Google account anyway?
And they sync to your Google account. Yeah. Well, you can
tell them to
elect to sync to your Google account.
Okay. So how do I remove Chrome?
Drag it to the trash.
Oh, just trash it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now make sure you're dragging the actual application.
Yeah, the Chrome application.
Not the shortcut.
In the applications folder. The trick is all of Chrome support files, which are in the application support folder. It's almost never the application itself. It's almost always one of the preference files or support files.
Right.
And I am Googling to find out how to uninstall Google Chrome. but generally speaking, it's under application support. And then could also be under preferences.
Okay.
You can also be sure that you've got the latest version of Chrome. It's pretty good about updating itself.
Yeah, I think it is.
There is also one thing you can do before you try that, and I'm trying to find. Oh, I don't have my Ethernet plugged in. That's what.
Oh, there you go. Hold on.
You can launch Chrome without any extensions, and sometimes it's an extension that's causing the problem, and not the browser itself.
What do you mean without extension?
There are things that get installed into Chrome called extensions that extend the functionality, that add new features to Chrome. And sometimes that can be a problem. There's a key to hold down. It's either option or command or something like that. I'm looking for that, too, to launch Chrome without those extensions. And if it works okay, then you can go into your extension manager and delete the extensions that that might be causing it a problem.
So hold down one of the keys.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it's the Chrome safe mode, and all my the summaries I'm finding say to get into safe mode ... open the rest of the web page to tell me which key it is to hold down.
Right. In the meantime, if you want to know where your Google user profile, your Chrome user profile information is, in the Mac menu bar at the top of the screen, you can click Go, then select Go to Folder, and then type /library/Google, then click Go, and then there's all those, you'll see all those folders.
Oh, this is the Windows version of Google Chrome.
And then sort of an unrelated question, is it safe to share your network with neighbors, like other people in the house, apartments, et cetera?
If you trust them not to do anything illegal, immoral, or criminal that will get you in trouble, because you are the end of the network and the police show up and raid your house.
I see.
Right.
I don't think that would happen, but anyway.
Well, that is the problem. You know,
experience down?
Pardon?
Does it slow down surfing? I mean, if everybody gets on it at once?
A little bit. Sure it will. Of course it will. Depends on who you've got as your internet service provider and how fast their connection is. If you're on a fairly slow DSL connection or the lowest mode, say, of Time Warner, which is the least expensive mode, getting 5-6 people on it will certainly slow it down, maybe even 3 people on it, which, depending on what they're doing. But if you're up, you know, at the higher end of Time Warner, or you're on Greenlight, it's hard to completely fill that.
Okay.
But yeah, so if you want to, if you run it from the command line, you can do it with --- disable extensions.
Yeah.
But I don't know how it is.
There is a method in the GUI. I just haven't found it yet. I keep finding the Windows versions, not the Mac versions.
Right.
It's typically either option. You hold the option key down while you launch Chrome, or the command key, or sometimes command and option, and that will run it in safe mode with no extensions.
Okay. All right, I can look it up too, yeah. I think.
I think there is, in Chrome itself, if you go to your hamburger menu, there is a, oh, there was at least, to relaunch in safe mode. But I don't see that on my version of Chrome anymore.
It would be on yours, yeah.
That takes you to the extensions manager to see what extensions you do have.
Yeah.
But the relaunch in safe mode seems to be missing from the menu anymore. I hate when they change stuff.
Oh, it's the worst. It's the worst.
It must have made sense to somebody.
The first thing to try really is to just delete all those preferences in the /library/Google folder for Chrome, and then restart it. Delete it, then go in and remove all that stuff, and then reload it again, and that will theoretically give you a brand new clean copy. Mostly without any extensions and without your bookmarks, which means that whatever may have been causing the problem shouldn't be anymore.
Okay. And it also may be a sign to switch to Firefox or Safari and try that one for a while.
Sure.
Yeah, I could do that. I thought about that, but
yep.
I was, once I get used to one thing, it's hard for me to switch.
Yeah.
No, I get that. And Chrome is the most popular browser on Earth, so... They're doing something right. All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you. We'll be back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, it's the Halloween edition of Sound Bites.
That we had gotten a text in there, and they were asking, is it going to rain tonight for Halloween? So that's why I threw it in.
There you go.
Hey, we ask, you receive. Hey, we try to answer all questions that we get. And as far as I know right now, kids are going to be able to go out trick-or-treating and stay dry. It's not supposed to rain till later on tonight. So the kids can go out there and have fun, but definitely be safe.
Yep, yep. All right, sadly.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I'm on Periscope, but I'm not seeing anybody's texts. I'm not seeing the chats. I don't understand it. Anyway, Apple was slapped with a class action suit on Friday, claiming that the company failed to properly warn users that the new Wi-Fi Assist feature in iOS 9 will use data from their cellular plan. A California-based couple has filed a class action lawsuit accusing Apple of doing too little to warn iPhone users about Wi-Fi Assist data usage. Allegedly, the guide it posted in response to concerns about the feature doesn't cut the mustard. In the complaint, plaintiffs William Scott Phillips and Suzanne Schmidt Phillips allege that because of costs related to Wi-Fi Assist, the overall amount in controversy exceeds $5 million. Million. Once users update to iOS 9, Wi-Fi Assist is turned on by default. Its goal is to ensure a smooth internet experience, switching to cellular data in the event that the user is connected to a weak Wi-Fi signal. The lawsuit claims that Apple downplays the possible data overcharges a user could incur from Wi-Fi Assist. Some who don't understand how Wi-Fi Assist works, or even that it exists, have alleged that the new feature has caused them to use more cellular data than anticipated. But the new class action suit alleges it should be Apple who should reimburse customers for any overages. The complaint asserts that Apple did not properly explain Wi-Fi Assist on its website until only after a flood of articles were written about unintended cellular data use. For the plaintiffs, that addition to the website was too little, too late. The suit states that the plaintiffs incurred overuse charges on both of their iPhone 5S units after upgrading to iOS 9. Did not say exactly how much those charges were, but asserts that the plaintiffs in the class were misled about cellular data usage on their devices. In the complaint, Apple is accused of violating California's unfair competition law, the state's false advertising law, and of negligent misrepresentation, and probably general mopery. To shut off Wi-Fi Assist, iOS 9 users must open the Settings app and choose Cellular, then scroll to the bottom to find the toggle button. The option is missing on some older Apple devices, including the iPhone 4S, the iPad 2, and the first generation iPad mini. So, did Wi-Fi Assist do you wrong? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I've always thought it should be the other way around. I have a strong Wi-Fi signal but a weak cell signal. Use the Wi-Fi instead.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, that's,
right.
Yeah. Well, and that's how the iPhone has been all this time. If you're connected to Wi-Fi, it will use it instead of cellular. Apparently, they had too many. Probably goes back to someone complaining about, you know, my cellular is too weak. And, all right, we'll put in this Wi-Fi assist. How's that for you? Well, you don't like that either? Well, you know,
well, the problem that they're saying is twofold. First, that Apple didn't tell them enough about it. And secondly, that they turn it on by default and don't tell people that. And that's true pretty much across the board for almost everything. There are some things that are turned on by default in the operating system because somebody somewhere made a decision that's the way it had to be. And that from there, that makes some people very happy and some people very unhappy. And
that's the tyranny of the default.
It's exactly right.
And hardly anyone ever goes in and looks at the defaults.
I had an interesting discussion with one of my students on Friday. He wants to be able to do some copying from his Linux laptop to his Linux desktop, or from his Linux desktop to his Linux laptop, depending on which he's on. And I told him, well, you can do rsync, and you can rsync bidirectionally. He said, but then if I delete something from one machine, it's deleted from the other machine. I said, yeah. He said, well, what if I do that accidentally? I don't want it to come back. But if I do it on purpose, I do want it to come back. I said, rsync cannot figure out your intent. It doesn't do magic.
Computers do what we tell them to, not what we want them to.
Exactly. So, you know, he really had trouble with that. And I said, it doesn't do magic. I can't put it any simpler than that.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Patrick from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Patrick. What's up?
Well, guys, a wonderful show, as always.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you could offer a couple tips. I'm recording some videos I want to put on YouTube. They're ones I've done so far, because I have one. I bought a new camcorder, a Sony, well, it's not new, but, you know, a year old or so, Sony HDR 22X, or something anyway. I don't have it in front of me. They're tending to be long or larger file size, so I've tried compressing them, and that worked okay for 8, but if I wanted to get up to 15 or 20, which really isn't unreasonable.
15 or 20 what?
Minutes.
Oh, minutes. Okay, sorry. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
As I was sitting on hold here, I got wondering about if you somehow going through Google Hangout would be helpful at all, or I'll just kind of listen for a moment while you guys scratch your heads and figure out what do you think that is a better way to do this.
Well, if you do it through Google Hangouts, I know that it'll take at least 2 hours because we're doing that right now, and it records 2 hours of show for us.
I think it will do 8 hours live.
Yeah.
In one chunk.
In one chunk.
Okay.
So if you were to do it through that, you could do it as a private chat and just not have anybody else in it, right? But it does mean that whoever is who finds it or is waiting for you to do it can see it live as you're doing it.
Right, I get that. I guess I should have backed up and added an extra point in here. I'm recording separate from the computer and then bring the recording back to my house where I have my computer, and I want to upload it. I was wondering if uploading it at that point is no longer live, but it's on the camcorder. Is there any advantage of going through Google Hangout, or maybe I misdirected you with that comment about the Google
Hangout? Well, Google Hangout would do it live.
I'm just looking for an easier way to get 20 minutes, which really doesn't seem like a lot of time.
Using Google Hangouts, it would be a live broadcast. So if you took 2 hours to record it, it would take 2 hours to play it into Google Hangouts.
Right. Here's the thing. You get a 15-minute default max.
Okay.
Right, for YouTube in general, that can be extended. You also get 2 gigabytes for the maximum size from the YouTube web page, but using it from an up-to-date browser lets that be larger, where you would update it from the browser.
And we posted a link to the YouTube help page on how to verify your account to get longer than 15 minutes.
Okay, but I said 20 minutes. Even if I went 14, my problem is that 8, it seems to be running out of it seems to be too big.
Right. And
should I be compressing this more or maybe recording at a lower setting?
Exactly. Here's the thing. Until you are verified, you have 15 minutes and 2 gigs.
Okay.
So once you get verified, both of those, as far as I know, upgrade.
Yes, you get 11 hours and 128 gigs maximum file size.
Right, so get yourself verified. That should solve your problem.
Okay.
There you go. Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Have fun. Yeah, it's Google has some interesting limits on its stuff until you get farther along.
Yeah, trying to weed out some of the cruft that comes up. I'm surprised 15 minutes is the default length.
As opposed to like 3?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's it makes sense that they would, you know, particularly when you're just starting out, maybe you don't need more than 15 minutes. They're trying to hit that balance between we're trying to get rid of the jerks,
yeah,
and we're trying to allow everybody to do whatever they want.
And we're almost programmed from television schedules from the last, you know, 50, 60 years, that you watch 7 minutes and then there's a 5-minute commercial. Then you watch 7 minutes and there's 5 minutes of commercials.
Right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
Hi. I'm still running Windows 7. I've been pretty happy with it.
Yep.
But I find that in the morning, in particular, there's a lot of disk thrashing going on. So I'm thinking that, you know, I do run some programs in the background. I have CrashPlan and various antivirus and malware programs. But when I bring up the task manager, look at what programs are running, I don't see anything typically. And yet I can see that the disk is very busy. It goes on for perhaps a half hour, maybe even longer, and finally it dies down later in the morning. What's going on?
Well, first thing I would do is take a look at all the devices, all the programs that you've added that may do backups or checking, and see what time and how long it takes them to do their thing.
Do you let it sleep at night, or is it on and awake?
It's basically on and awake.
Right. So take a look at your antivirus, take a look at CrashPlan, take a look at everything you're running automatically that would scan the drive for any reason, and see what times it starts and what times it ends. And that will tell you when it's actually running. And if there's something running outside that, I would definitely dance the security tango first just to make sure it's clean.
But when they are running, aren't they supposed to show up in the somewhere in the task manager? Shouldn't I see those programs?
Theoretically.
Not always, though.
But not always.
It could spawn, what is it, the Windshell? No, what's the one that shows up 100 times and you don't know what program is calling it?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about, but I can't think of the name. Anyway, here's the other thing. It may not, it also depends. Do you have a separate login for management stuff?
Yeah, but I'm the one who uses it. That's the one typically. I know you're not supposed to do that, but that's typically what I'm running.
Okay, well.
That's the admin.
Yeah. It may be that you are not seeing everything that's running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Task Manager has a show all rather than show just mine.
Right.
Okay. But if I'm logged in as admin, I should be seeing that.
Not necessarily, not everything runs as admin. A lot of things run as system.
Yep. And they run in the background, and you won't see them.
Right.
Is there a way to bring up the things that are running under system?
Yeah, in the Task Manager window, there's one of the menus says show all processes rather than show mine.
Yep.
Yeah. One other thing, similar. Also, typically in the morning, the iTunes folder pops up. I don't use it that often, but it always comes up in the morning, and then I have to go through a few steps to close it down.
In your, if you go to, this is Windows 7?
Yes.
All right, if you go down and start in the start button, type in msconfig.
Yeah.
And open that up, and one of the tabs is startup. And 10 to 1 odds, the iTunes is one of those that it's checked.
His machine's been on. He runs his machine.
See, that's why I'm thinking it's asleep, and he's waking it up in the morning.
No,
and so all the updates are starting to check. All the startup programs are starting again.
Yeah.
Do you keep an iPhone or iPod plugged into your computer?
Occasionally, but this window comes up even when the iPhone is
I would
not.
Still check the startup folder. Again, like Steve was saying, there's things are starting to get reinitiated, yeah. And that's one of the things to start up is that iTunes, you don't need that in the startup folder.
It's there to recognize when you plug a device in, so it automatically opens to let you manage that device.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, well, I'll check that as well.
Can't hurt.
Yep. Thanks.
Yep.
There's so many things, these little things, the Windows updates will check, any programs you do have will update.
Yeah, and if it does do any updates, it can change some of the settings, too.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because it should be doing that usually on a schedule. Which is why when you first turn on your computer, it takes a really long time because those schedules are all starting.
Right.
But if it's been on and not sleeping, then it shouldn't have started right then.
That's why the two things I say are make sure that you can see all the processes, not just yours. And secondly, if there's something running that you don't know, you should be dancing the security tango.
Mm-hmm.
At securitytango.com.
Ding.
Ding. I beg your pardon. Apparently, I'm choking to death here on the air. That's great radio.
Usually, it takes a frog.
Yeah, it takes a frog to know a frog. The when you have the task manager open, particularly if you're not running as administrator, you don't see everything. And even if you are running as administrator, there are things that run as system. And a lot of antivirus stuff and CrashPlan run as system. So you wouldn't see them unless you specifically, as administrator, said see all. We're going to take another quick break. Back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported and very grateful. Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And on Twitter, our friend Joe from Cheek. Oh, wait, he's not here to end it for us. Cheek Tawaga says that the program name we could not think of is SVC host, service host. What happens is it spawns a brand new thread handle for every
process
in service. So you'll see 1,000 of them. And
and there's almost no way to know what
which
process
one spawned,
spawned that one.
Yeah. So you may see a bunch of those because...
But at least one of those should be having high CPU activity as...
Right.
Whatever's doing the disk usage.
Right, but it still doesn't tell you what that program is running.
Right.
But I'll almost guarantee that if he takes a look at how he's got, what did he have set up? He had AVG and a crash plan, was it? Yeah, he had AVG, some sort of antivirus and crash plan. And if he takes a look at those, he's probably going to see that at least one of them runs at that time every morning.
Yep.
You know, I tend to, because I leave my machines on all night, I tend to run both of those at like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., when I'm likely not up, I'm as likely to not be up as I am to be up.
You know, that's one thing a lot of folks will say, you know, because I do the same thing. I leave mine on 24/7, and like my browsers, I'll just minimize those so I can just quick have them pop open.
Right.
But on my browsers, I can have up to, you know, 10, 15 windows, tabs open.
Yep.
So a lot of folks, well, you're on. No. Yes, it was. It said you were on.
My computer's on,
and that's down in the browser. I did not have Foxfire open.
Right.
So, yes, it says I'm also, on, but it's lying.
Also, why are they angry that you didn't answer them at 2 in the morning?
Because
he
was
on. Paying you?
Yeah, exactly.
You were there. Why didn't you answer?
Are you in some way beholden to them? Are you an indentured servant of some sort?
I guess I missed that memo.
Apparently you did.
This is the thing that makes me crazy.
And that check. Yes, exactly. Exactly. I get the same thing from people. I texted you at 4 a.m. and you weren't on. Well, so? And your point actually is, I'm sorry, you're not my liege lord, and you're not paying me support, and I don't do support at 4 in the morning anyway.
Well, not even so much 4 in the morning. You know, I could sit there, because of my hours that I work, you know, I'm in bed usually by 9:30 at the latest. So, again, I'll turn off the monitor, and that might still be up on the screen, and folks will leave messages, you know, on Facebook or that.
Yep.
Sorry, you know, I just turn the... I leave my machines on all the time.
Yep.
My network is pretty darn secure that nobody's going to get into it, and I'm pretty confident of.
Right.
I don't go sharing stuff and all that, so I'm not too worried about it.
Right.
So, yeah, you can get porked off all you want, but I don't respond to you right away, but you know what? Well, it was just a simple question. Good.
You know, but it's true. It's been true forever. People used to say to me, I called you. You didn't answer the phone. I wasn't home. Back in the day when we all had landlines. I didn't know I was supposed to sit. What is it, Friday night and I'm a 16-year-old girl? I was not sitting by the phone waiting for it to ring. I apologize for that.
Well, that's where sometimes, you know.
You are old. They don't do that anymore.
Was it back in that day
when they did sit by the phone waiting
now
for it to
ring?
Now
I just ignore the phone when it rings on my hip.
Yeah.
Well, same here. Or text.
I don't care.
You know, or text to come in. Well, shouldn't you get that? No. Well, they might need you. I says, it's still a phone.
That's right.
If it's that important, you know, they can call me.
Right.
I'm sorry. I'm not a slave. If folks text me, and if I, you know, if it's something I'm expecting, but otherwise, if it's that important, pick up. It still is a phone. Granted, it's a convenient device that you can sit there and text. But texting is at my convenience.
Right.
Not so at somebody else just because all of a sudden they text me. Well, shouldn't you answer them back? And that's where it gets me also. Some folks say, well, I got to answer them right back. Why?
Right.
Well, they took the time to text me. Yeah. And so? Why do you have to text them back immediately? You could be busy doing so. Yeah. Well, that's being inconsiderate.
It depends on what you think of the phone as. I think of the phone as being there for my convenience.
Mm-hmm.
So if I wanted to talk to somebody, I have a device right on my hip that I can talk to them at.
Yeah.
And when someone calls me, if it's not my wife or my daughter, I don't feel any obligation to answer the phone. I always answer when it's my daughter, because if she's calling, because she's a 22-year-old woman, mm-hmm. if she's calling me, there's something wrong, because she just normally does not call her father.
Right.
If it's my wife calling, I answer because I want to sleep with both eyes closed.
Yeah, and you know, and
as far as anybody else.
How do you train your wife to not interrupt you when it's not that important?
Yeah. Oh, don't. I just married her. I don't explain it.
No, like I say, this individual at work, though, you know, they think they got to answer everything. And I go, no, I refuse to be a slave.
I also make a choice. If I'm out with somebody and my phone rings, I make a choice as to whether or not the person I'm out with is more important than a phone call. Now, again, if it's my wife's ringtone or my daughter's ringtone, I will absolutely answer
it. Exactly.
Other than that, 99.9% of the time, the person I actually took the time to go out and sit with mm-hmm. is more important to me than the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it always kind of saddens me when that's not true the other way around.
Yeah. Oh,
no, I get it. If you're at work and you expect maybe to get a call or you're, whatever.
But general stuff.
Right. You know, if I'm expected, like,
no, I told this guy, I told this guy, you know, no,
they don't understand that.
Yeah.
They are a slave to the phone.
Yeah.
The problem is, and this has been, psychologists have said this, not me, I'm not that smart. They've said that basically it's a way to think of yourself as more important. If someone is calling you, it must be because it's important, because you're important. And they wouldn't call you if the thing wasn't important. So it's a way to think of yourself as more sort of self-aggrandize.
Okay.
And either I don't think of myself as that important, or I'm so much more important that they're not important to me.
Well, see, I think about it the other way around. I don't call anyone unless it is important.
Well, exactly.
My wife will call me during the day, and you know, her and her friend just went to the park and saw this really neat flower. I didn't need to know that at work. I could wait till I got home.
Right. But she gets angry if you don't answer.
Right, yeah. And she yells at me when I happen to mention I'm busy at work. Because he always starts out, are you busy? Yes, I'm at work.
or one step backwards, though, is the texting. That's what gets me.
Yeah.
Folks say, well, no, I got to answer this back. Why? You're at work. Or you're busy with somebody.
Right.
That I think is even more rude.
Yep.
Like I said, I will.
Well,
look,
they
and
took
if it
the time
my
to
my wife or my daughter. Then yes, I will.
Yes, that's but one anybody of the things else,
I, like. I don't care.
That's one of the things I like about the smartwatch is I can glance at it to see what that notification was.
I found the watch I want.
Yeah.
It's called the Block. B L O C K.
Made by Lego.
Yes. Dang near. The basic idea is you buy the watch, and it comes with a leather strap, or plastic, I don't remember. But you can replace that strap with a series of link straps,
mm-hmm.
and those links are modules. So you can get an extra battery, you can get a camera.
It's like that modular phone.
Exactly, it's like the modular phone, the Ara, the Project Ara, or the Block phone. And it's called, what's the name of the website? It's
ChooseBlocks.
ChooseBlocks.com or .net?
.com.
.com. It's not out yet, and it's
a live Kickstarter running.
Yeah, there's a live Kickstarter running, and it's not going to be cheap, but it's going to be great, and I'm really looking forward to that watch being available. It comes in multiple colors, and so I can add multiple battery modules. I mean, it comes with a battery in the watch, right? But I can add multiple battery modules. I can add a camera. I can add a thumbprint reader. I can add a
NFC. It looks like a bunch of big Legos.
Exactly. And it's just so cool, so clever. I'm really looking forward to seeing it in the real world and seeing Gyroscope? The reviews on it. Yeah. Well, not all those modules are available yet. Heart rate monitors, air quality monitors, name it. You know, and it's open source. The hardware is open source, so anybody can build a module for it.
Jeez Louise.
So conceptually, it's really, really,
that
really
is really
clever.
Cool looking.
And anybody listening who feels the deep and abiding need to buy me a Christmas gift,
why can't we test them for
this
a
is
couple
number
years?
One. Yeah, no kidding.
I think the company should send the three of us samples to test out for them.
I completely agree. I completely agree.
I think that would be nice.
I don't see why not. It's a very cool toy.
We could do some pretty good reviews between now and Christmas.
Yes, we certainly could.
Hey?
Yes, we certainly could.
On the longest running computer show.
Listening. Of course they are. We are the longest running computer show after all.
Yes.
But it is very nifty, and it's the one I'm looking forward most to seeing. Now, again, it's just a Kickstarter right now, which means
like
it may or may not be real. It may or may not show up sometime
like
they, in the next year.
Remember that band that you could sit there, put it on, and you touch it, and the computer screen came down on your arm?
Yeah, yeah. That it actually projected the thing on your arm.
Down,
with that, of course, long sleeves.
Yeah, you roll down your sleeve.
Yeah, or you could make it go up on your wrist, on your hand, back of your hand. But yeah, I was fascinated by that, and if it actually exists, my plan is at least to see, look at the reviews, see how robust it is, how well it actually works, yada yada yada. But it looks very clever, and that's something I'm very interested.
You know, that's another Kickstarter program. If you want to have a nice analog watch on one side, but then you want your smartwatch on the other side? You can put two watch faces on one band.
Yeah, very nice. I don't know why you would, but okay, that's very nice.
That all throws me back, you know, when we're sitting there mentioning that, it throws me back to the days. Remember, we used to sit there and do a lot of testing for various companies.
Yep.
They'd send us the software and all that type of stuff, and we'd test it.
Yep. That's done less now because all of us are beta testers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything is a public beta.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of companies picked that up on Google. How long was Google Mail in beta or, you know, Google, do Google whatever? As long as you say it's beta, then if it crashes, well, it's just beta.
Oh,
what do you expect?
Speaking of beta, and this is a little off. You know how you hear, talking about being beta, I think the drug companies in it do us beta too, you know, because you'll hear the ads. You know, if it causes this, and this.
Yeah.
You know, if you have suicidal tendencies, you know, stop taking this and this.
Yeah.
I heard the best one Thursday night. They're advertising for this one drug, okay? And they said, you know, a whole list of things. And their very last words were, and if you die, call this number.
If you die?
Call this number right away.
Okay, then.
I turned to Kathy and I says, wait a minute. How do you call somebody when you're dead? Both of us heard it. If you die, call this number.
Nice. Thinking,
boy, they better reword that
nice.
Commercial.
No, I like that one. I'm all ready for that one.
How the...
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, because they are. They're using us for beta testers.
Yep.
You know, on some of this stuff. Because it's sad. Our society... You know, they're so anxious, the almighty dollar, to do the testing and that, and they run computer models and everything else, and, oh, it should be safe, and they want to play the statistics.
Yeah.
You know?
And nowadays, like you said, the side effects, there was a nasal decongestant on the market that said among the side effects were suicidal tendencies and anal leakage. And I thought, I'll just buy more Kleenex, thanks.
Yeah.
If I got to make that choice, the choice is more Kleenex.
Well, you sit there, you listen to all these side effects, and it's like, I guess I can live with what I got because it ain't that bad.
Right. But yeah, we see that all the time. Kleenex, by the way, is a registered trademark of somebody, I forget. Yeah. Kimberly Clark, I think.
Yep, I think you're right.
Yeah.
But I mean, our society, you know, I mean,
well, one person in the study group reported that, so the lawyers say you have to put it on your list.
Right.
But that's the whole thing. Again, and this brings us all back to computers and everything else, how now everything is at our fingertips. And it's just not, oh, I'll get it when I get home and look it up on my laptop. No, you can open up your cell phone and boom, quick, go Google. and boom, pull it up, and Google will sit there and tell you everything about what you're looking for and give you a voice description of it.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it is really remarkable what it can do now.
Yeah, the whole Barbet thing is just screwed.
Yeah. Yes.
Who can ask their smartphone faster?
All right, that music tells us you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But knowing that you're not all that smart, we're going to give you another chance to do it again. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back on the other side with a whole nother hour of sound bites. You are listening to Dave Enright, to Steve Ray, to me, Nick Francesco. And we will be back with your calls, more news, lots more nonsense, for a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Operator is standing by, and we'll be back shortly with a whole lot more sound bites and the truly great, solely member supported, and very grateful Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. That is exactly right. We are Soundbites. And for those of you who are just tuning into the second hour, you missed some amazing stuff in the first hour.
Really?
Yes. Oh, we juggled. We sang in three-part harmony. Wait. No, this is Soundbites. Okay, yeah. So here's what...
Those meds are doing good for you.
The meds are doing good for me. I'm in a good mood today. The Periscope is up. If you're on Twitter, it's at @NickFrancesco. You'll see a link to the Periscope feed. Steve is up on YouTube, on youtube.com/soundbitesradio.
And I'm just up.
And Dave is just up.
Yeah, running the boards.
This side of the dirt.
But we're also up on the live stream at jazz901.org. And, of course, we're clearly live on the air. Sadly, on the Periscope, the only one you can see is me because I'm doing other things. I haven't got the time to shift this camera around and make it do stuff. But other than that, we're here. There are a couple people watching that, and you can... send us information on the app and send us loves and all the other things that you can do with that. But thank you for joining us. Let me say that for those of you who, again, who are just tuning in, the station made its goal to a multi-$1,000 push at the last day.
We made it, but you know what? Wouldn't hurt. You know, folks were still thinking of giving. Please don't let this discourage you from still sending it in, maybe as an extra Christmas gift to yourself, to the station.
Right, you can still pledge securely online.
You can still get in on some of the great gifts. We don't, just because it ended, that doesn't mean that you can not get in there. If maybe you were gone or anything else, or who knows what, you were a little late in getting to it. Please don't let that discourage you. We can still always use it. You know what I mean? $50,000. Is really bare minimum Rob uses to run this station. Right. So a little extra wouldn't hurt for like what we were saying before. If one of the CD players go down or something else breaks, it'd be nice just to have a little extra cash here or there.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of cushion.
Yeah, not a lot of cushion. So don't they made it. They don't need my money. No, don't let that discourage
you. There's the expected expenses, and then there's the unexpected.
Exactly. Exactly.
But for those of you who did become members of the family, thank you very much. And for those of you who once again didn't, well, you get the freeload for another few months, conscience free, because we won't be talking about it again. But at any rate, let's go back to the news. Oh, if you pirated, speaking about freeloaders, if you pirated Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, Microsoft wants to welcome you back. All is forgiven. Microsoft said Thursday that it will run an experiment, quote unquote, to offer a path to those users who have either pirated or purchased an unlicensed copy of Windows 7 or 8.1, giving them the opportunity to download a licensed copy from Microsoft itself or to use a code from a third-party reseller. Either way, the licensed Windows 10 software will be used to update the PC with a valid license. We'd like to welcome as many of these customers as possible to the legitimate Windows ecosystem, Microsoft's Terry Myerson said in a blog post Thursday afternoon. Why does it matter? Microsoft originally said in March that users with a pirated copy of Windows 7 or 8.1 would be able to upgrade to Windows 10. The company later clarified that any user who did so would still be running an unlicensed copy. It's unclear how much software in the world is pirated. The Business Software Alliance claims that in 2010, 4 out of 10 software programs installed around the world were illegally copied. But Microsoft's free upgrade to Windows 10 is surely cut into that. Otherwise, Amazon sells a USB flash drive with Windows 10 Home installed on it for $110, and Microsoft itself sells Windows 10 Pro, for $200. Myerson said that one unexpected aspect of Windows 10 upgrade process was discovering just how many pirates were upgrading to Windows 10 and then turning around and purchasing a valid license from Microsoft. That gave the company an idea. We'll offer a one-click opportunity to get genuine via the Windows Store or by entering an activation code purchased elsewhere, Myerson wrote. If this turns into a path for most customers to get genuine, we will expand the experiment. If Microsoft detects that you're running an unlicensed copy of Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, you'll be offered a way out. So what's the appeal for a pirate to suddenly go legit? Microsoft relied upon the tried and true tactic of trying to scare users straight, which, to be fair, isn't necessarily a wrong thing to do. Microsoft also said that if you're running a legitimate copy of 7 or 8.1, beginning in 2015, the Windows 10 update will be moved to recommended status, which means that most PCs will download and install it by default. You'll still have the option to opt out or even revert back to the older OS once that update takes place, however, but you only have 10 days to do so. Finally, there's better news for those who are keeping up with Windows updates. Microsoft has pledged to reveal more information about what's actually in them, as it used to do. The company also said that it would improve scheduling options for when those updates are installed. So, ready or not, Windows 10 is coming. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
So everyone who has intentionally not upgraded to Windows 10 yet, you're going to have to turn off your automatic updates.
You will be updated.
Change it to rather than install and restart, change it to ask me first.
Yes.
Yep.
Because you want all the other updates, just not the Windows 10
one. Right. Usually ask me, we'll let you pick and choose.
Right.
Yep.
So Microsoft is very adamant that they want people on Windows 10.
Oh, yeah, they're positioning themselves so, you know, like we've said before, you're going to lease it.
On the other side, it is best for the developers to know that most of their customers are going to be on one platform. So how much code is in every program now to say, well, if you're running Windows 7, I can do this. If you're running Windows 8, I can do this. If you're running Windows 9, I can do this.
Well, that's like the universal installers for the Mac.
Yeah.
You end up with a much bigger file to download than you normally would.
Yeah.
Installation takes longer. And honestly, who knows what got screwed up in the complexity of writing that code.
Right.
So, I absolutely get it.
If everyone's running Windows 10 and everyone's running, you know, Mac OS 9, then the developers have a lot easier time of it.
But see, that's where, for me, I honestly mean this.
Is it easy for the developers or is it easy for the user? Take your pick.
If my desk, you only have one. My desktop crashes, I'm seriously thinking about a Chromebook. You know, I mean, for what I do, I mean, the internet and the few programs that I use, you know, like Quicken, I can do that online.
Yeah. Today is the only day, so Saturdays during the show is the only day I use my laptop.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing 27 different things, but I'm still on my tablet most of the time, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the tablets, the Chromebooks, the less expensive machines, they can do almost everything you need.
Yeah, and I mean, yep. For what I'm doing now, you know, it's not like I'm a big gamer or anything else. Surfing the internet and a few programs that I like to use.
Well, and in addition, for many people, a Chromebook is a good second machine. Mm-hmm. So if you do the high-end stuff, you're at home. If you're just going to go out and you just want to take something with you to look stuff up or to do a little maybe writing or whatever while you're out, you can do that. Don't forget, NaNoWriMo is coming up. The National Novel Writing Month is mm-hmm. November. So if you're into NaNoWriMo, I personally will tell you that a Chromebook is a magnificent thing to be carrying around.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Is November also the Grow Your Mustache Month?
It's Movember.
Movember.
Yeah, I'll be growing one too.
But no, I'm thinking, you know, just keep the desktop, you know, if, for whatever reason, you know, if I had to do it, I just put Windows 7 back on it and disconnect it from the internet because I don't need it for that. Get a Chromebook for the internet and do the other few things that I need to do off this desktop, because Windows 7 is a great operating system. It'll do what I want it to do. As long as I'm not needing the updates and I'm not updating all these other programs, that's fine.
For those of us who mostly live in the Google ecosystem, and I do everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Well, I use online Quicken for that stuff, and I use there are editors, as well as the Google Drive stuff, of course. There's video editing tools, there's audio editing tools, there's graphical editing tools, all available on the web, and they work great.
Well, it's even like off my phone. I mean, if I get a check, I don't even have to go to the bank. I pull up an app on my phone. It sits there and lets me take a picture of the front and the back, hit deposit. I don't have to go to the bank. I can do everything from an app or on my tablet or my desktop.
Yep. It's really getting to the... And, of course, this is the problem that Microsoft has. You know, they're on 90% of the world's desktops.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's only about, what is it now, 60% of the laptops? If you think of Chromebooks as a laptop, then they're on about 60%, I think, is the number. I don't remember off the top of my head. But they aren't growing.
Right.
Right, so that's why they're going to the subscription model, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But also, they've been left behind in a lot of ways. People use their phones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're an iPhone person or an Android phone person, you're living within a complete ecosystem, right? So Steve has an iPhone and a MacBook Pro and maybe a MacBook on his desk. He's got an iPad. So it all works together. It all does what it does.
Yeah.
I've got a Nexus 7 tablet. I've got an Android phone. I've got a Chromebook. I've got Chrome on my desktop. I'm in the Google ecosystem. It all works together. Microsoft, not a lot of people own the phone. So right away, you've broken the ecosystem.
Yep.
You know, and so they have had to learn to work together with these other companies, but that also means it weakens their hold on their customers.
Yep.
So if I've got a Windows machine and an iPhone, or a Windows machine and an Android phone, I've broken the ecosystem. And Google doesn't care because they've still got what I use an awful lot of the time.
Well, does Google make apps for Windows Phone?
I don't know.
Because nobody has a Windows phone. They do on iOS, which is really interesting, that Google makes apps for their competitor. Apple doesn't make very many. I think the only app they make for Android is Switch to iPhone.
Right. They make Switch to iPhone. They don't make iTunes.
The Beats app, since they bought Beats apparently app, hasn't been updated yet. And the Apple Music app for Android, I don't think, has been released yet.
Right.
So Google is one of the only companies that makes apps for their competing platforms because they don't care.
Because they don't care.
Because they make money on every platform.
Right. Well, I had somebody ask me, we were talking about it, and CRS with me, for storage. Google's storage is for storing photos and all that other stuff.
They give you the most storage out of any service.
Well, here's the deal with photos. If it's under, if it's 16 gig or under each individual picture,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't count as storage.
16 megapixels.
16 meg. Sorry. What did I say?
Gigs.
I'm an idiot. 16 megapixel pictures or lower, it doesn't count against your storage.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got, and this is true, 15,000 plus pictures up on Google's photos section, and it doesn't, I'm using zero of my storage.
Okay.
Actually, I'm using a little bit because there's also a couple of movies.
What do they charge for?
I can tell you that in just
a
minute.
And you know, getting more storage is less expensive.
Because somebody asked the question, and I'll get back to them on it.
And what's a little annoying on the Apple side is that one of the new features in iOS and macOS is the iCloud Photo Library. So you put all of your photos in the cloud, except Apple only gives you 5 gigabytes of free space.
Right.
And most people's photo libraries are significantly... So 200 gigs is only a buck a month, but... 5 gigs for free is among the lowest of all of the provided. Right. Google is 15 gigs free.
Right, yeah. Google is 15 gigs for free. 100 gigs is $1.99 a month. Two bucks a month. Terabyte is $10 a month.
Yeah, but even 200 gigs.
And so much of your stuff doesn't count toward that storage anyway.
And what I was trying to tell them is the nice thing about it. Well, I got to be at my computer. No, if you got your tablet. You can have the app on there and view your photos.
We can look at all my photos there. We can look at all my photos on my phone. We can
anywhere. They're available. Well, and they go, well, how secure it is? I go, it's 128-bit encryption.
Yep.
Nobody's getting to it. Don't worry about it.
Yep. That's exactly right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour. I think we've got somebody patiently waiting on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Hey, guess what? It's Soundbites on the truly great, solely member-supported, and really grateful Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have, there it is, Steve from Greece on the line. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a mail client question for you. I would like to change my mail client to Gmail, but Gmail is not a mail client.
Right, it's a website. Google doesn't... make a desktop client. They do make a mobile client.
When you say you want to change your mail client to Gmail,
right?
Are you saying that is not your current email address, and you would like to get a Gmail email address?
No, I'm saying when I click on a say a website says call me,
right?
Oh,
so you click on that, it immediately takes you to Outlook.
Yeah,
I don't want.
What web browser are you using?
Yes, or something like that. I want to email them. It takes me to Outlook. I don't want Outlook. I don't use Outlook. I want to be able to go to my Gmail to email them.
Okay, what web browser do you use?
Mostly I use Chrome.
Then when you go to a website with an email link up in the address bar... on the right, you will see a little icon. I forget exactly what that icon looks at it, but I think it's a double diamond, now that I think about it. And if you hover over it, it says Chrome would like to install a handler for this page. When you click on it, it says open mail links in Gmail. And you click on that, and then from then on, Chrome will open those email links in Chrome. That makes sense? Yeah. No, in Gmail.
Gmail, right. Okay, I never noticed that up there before.
Yeah,
and that's because Gmail is not a mail program, it's a website.
Right.
And so what the link is trying to do is open your mail program. So somewhere along the way, you'd had Outlook set as your default mail program.
It comes that way.
Yeah.
Right, and by installing the handler that Google asks you to install... it changes that default for Chrome. I don't know how you do that, but well, and
I'm posting a link how to do it in Chrome, Firefox, and Opera.
Okay. So, yeah, because I went in to change my client and I didn't see Gmail on there, and I couldn't figure out how to get Gmail on there.
Right, right.
Because it's not a client.
Right.
Right. But this will actually do that. Steve's going to put that on the website.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Excellent. Thanks.
You have a good day.
It's basically in that hamburger menu under settings, privacy, content.
Right. But posting the link will lead him to it right away. So we had for years, many people used web-based mail, AOL, Yahoo, etc. And then things like Thunderbird came along where you could incorporate that into a standard everyday mail client.
And then it goes back even farther. When email was first invented, you had to use a mail client.
Right.
And then websites started getting popular where you had a web client, and then it got confusing.
Right, exactly right. And so now with things like Gmail, millions upon millions of people use Gmail and having the ability. But again, and now let's talk about ecosystems. Many of those people are in the Google ecosystem, so they are using Chrome. So being able to install that handler means that anytime you see an email address on a web page, you can click on it and it'll open up Gmail. Actually, what it opens up is a separate window, which is just that send them a mail window with the address filled in. So you put in your subject and then your text and hit send, and off it goes, and that window closes. So it doesn't open the whole website. So it's faster and lighter weight and blah, 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 you know, all that
stuff. And making things simpler for folks.
And making things simpler.
That's what it's all about. It's just trying to, you know, not add complexity to it that folks, you know, get so confused. What's this for? You know, just keep it simple. The KISS approach.
Yep. My daughter also has pointed out to me several times that at the bottom of any Gmail mail form where you know, would hit send and send the message, the message window, there's a little link to add money. So
you can tell her, it works both ways.
Send her money, that's what I tell her. She said, Dad, I'm a graduate student. I said, oh, tell me about it. I know this.
Yeah.
Trust me when I tell you I know this.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard of Google Contributor?
I have not.
So one of the things that's happening, you know, we had ad blockopolypse. When content blockers are blocking ads, websites make their money on ads. So if you don't display the ads, then the website can go away. There's a program called Google Contributor, where since Google owns DoubleClick, one of the largest advertisers, you give Google a little bit of money, as low as $10 a month, and they will block the ads on your website, but still pay the company that you want to get money. So you can still support companies, you know, by paying them directly instead of needing to see all the annoying ads.
Well, I'd be interested in seeing how well that works. We can't even get people to pay for this show.
Yeah.
They're not going to, certainly not, nobody we're talking to is going to do that, but it's a very cool idea.
Most people wouldn't mind relevant ads. It's the annoying ads, the in-your-face ads, you know, the belly fat ads. You know, I don't need to, I know I'm fat, I don't need you to remind me.
Am I really? Wow, thanks.
Yeah. And so that's sort of the thing. We wouldn't mind relevant ads, but we don't like all this other stuff, so that it becomes, we'll block everything.
Mm-hmm.
But if everybody blocks ads, then the web will go away, because that's how most sites pay for themselves.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
There's more paywalls popping up. We're also already starting to see websites detecting you're running an ad blocker and either saying, too bad, you can't see our stuff unless you turn the blocker off, or, you know, more politely saying, you know, we make our money on ads. Would you please turn your blocker off?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've thought about putting that on Ask Nick. I've thought about it. I haven't done it, but I've thought about it.
You put the message up, but don't block the ads.
Yeah, there you go.
This site runs on advertising revenue. If you block that ad,
right? But yeah, a lot of people block ads now.
Due to the lack of your support,
yeah. Right. And I get it. The problem is that in very few cases can you say, I don't want annoying ads to appear on my website.
Yeah, how do you? Well, and it goes back. We've seen these cycles over the years that in the early days it was pop-up windows. that were the big annoying thing. And right. remember, what, StopZilla, the pop-up killer.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the browsers built in pop-up blockers. So when more people started getting pop-up blockers, the advertisers went to different ads, you know, banner ads and display ads. And now there's ads that cover the entire window, and you have to close the ad. You have to find where that stupid close button is so you can close the ad to see your content. And
no,
so the
I hate those.
The advertisers are working their way around it. But again, we probably wouldn't mind relevant ads. And most of us have learned how to tune out the ads, unless we're looking for them. But then on the other side, especially now on mobile, when you're often surfing cellular, where you pay by the you know meg,
right?
Ads take time and downloads, and so you are paying extra money to view those ads.
Right.
And there are some websites that tend to be more heavily advertising. And take much, much longer to download. One of the blogs I read is iMore.com, and their Mobile Nations is their parent company, so they have a really good they have one called Crackberry, and what's the Android? They have one an Android site that's neat. They got a neat name too, but they do have a lot of ads on their sites. And they are typically used as one of the examples where this page will load 50 to 75% faster if you turn the ads off. But then the site won't exist anymore if you turn the ads off because they need the ads to make the site. So there's this catch-22 about, you know, we want some ads but not too many. We want good ads but not bad ads. And how is it going to turn out?
Right.
That's what Steve Gibson says, we live in interesting times.
Right. Well, the thing you have to be aware of course, is that we tried micropayments.
Yeah, which is sort of what this Google contributor is.
Yeah.
So you pay Google $10 a month, and they pay the advertisers to the sites you go to.
Right.
And you don't have to force yourself to see the ads.
Right. But we tried micropayments directly where, let's say you go to AskNick.com and you want to read the news that I'm aggregating. It would cost you maybe a tenth of a penny to see a page. So you would have to sign up. And then I would automatically take a tenth of a penny out for every page you read.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that failed miserably because people can't control how much they're actually spending without a lot of,
I went to 44 pages this month and then a tenth of a page is 4.4. So, okay.
Yep.
Right? And so a tenth of a penny makes sense. But if you're saying like 0.413 pennies, then the math gets a lot harder.
Yeah.
But so something like Google Contributor, we say, look, I want to pay X number of dollars a month, and I don't want to see ads.
Yep.
That people can handle that kind of amount. And it is per month thing, right?
Yeah. So as low as $2 a month, it looks like you can start at.
Well, but when you get that, a certain percentage fewer ads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's... What, 10 bucks a month?
$10 a month is 50% fewer ads.
Right.
And because some of the ads aren't served by Google, so they can't control those.
Right.
And even the ad blockers have gotten in trouble for having sponsored content. So if you pay us enough money, we won't block your ad.
Right.
But we promise it'll only be tasteful ads.
Right.
Good ads.
For certain select values of tasteful.
Yeah.
I'm working with a startup company that has a very strict advertising policy. No sound, no video. It's either text or a picture because we want things to load. And the picture has to be a certain depth that it's very small because we want to have both a mobile app and a regular on-screen thing. And we want them to load as fast as possible.
Time is precious for some folks.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Speaking of which, there's a great new thing. Did I make it one of my stories this week? No, I did not.
But tell us anyways.
Facebook is doing this thing. It's either every Tuesday or every Thursday. They're going to cut their data line down to the kind of speeds people get in third world countries.
Except most third world countries are better than us.
Well, you're right.
Yeah.
The very low end stuff.
Dial up.
So in other words, we won't see anything.
No, internally for their developers.
2G Tuesdays.
Right. 2G Tuesdays. 2G Tuesdays. The basic idea being you guys have been writing stuff for our website that runs great at fiber speeds, But there are so many people who can't run fiber, who aren't running fiber, and therefore loading Facebook takes an hour. So you know what? Every Tuesday, you're going to get it at that speed. So start writing stuff that runs faster. I think that's a very clever idea. Back in the day when developers were actually diligent about these things, they would look at their websites on multiple browsers, on multiple devices, and at multiple speeds. So their code, rather, right? So yeah. If I created a website now, half the people don't ever look at it but in one browser. Those are the lazy developers. I don't ever want to work with them again as long as I live. Many of them, at least, look at it in multiple browsers, so that's nice. But very few people think about what will this look like on a phone? What will this look like on dial-up? What will this look like on a very slow connection? Because so many people nowadays are downsizing and buying less internet speed, right? You can always get the super low-end package from either for DSL or for cable. And so people are opting for that because they're retired or whatever it happens to be. And so their web browsing experience falls significantly, particularly if there are multiple people in the house. So Facebook is instituting these 2G Tuesdays in order to make sure that their developers feel the pain. It's a great idea. Yep. It's a great idea.
It goes back even farther, too. Isn't one of Bill Gates's early quotes in the PC days, it was 640K of memory, that we don't bother optimizing our code because the next chip will be faster anyway?
Yep. Well, that's why it used to be, everybody wrote their code in hand-coded assembler or in very tight C or whatever. Now you find somebody like Steve Gibson, who writes in hand-coded assembler, and he's a miracle. All right, we're going to take another quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported and very grateful, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Now let's talk before it hits that break. It makes me crazy. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And before we go to their phones, if any of you out there are Fortran programmers, NASA needs you. They are looking to revitalize Voyager, possibly just before it becomes V'ger, and they need people who can program it, reprogram it, and it knows Fortran and assembler.
I used to do Fortran and COBOL.
Yep.
And PL1.
Yep.
PL1
I tell my students all the time, if you always want a job, learn COBOL and Fortran.
Yep.
Because every bank in America still uses COBOL, and
they call top-down programming.
Right. You'll never be a superstar, but you'll never starve. All right, back to the
you have a few hundred tasks ahead of you, and you have 64K of memory.
Yep. Yep. Oh yeah, I remember those days.
That's not bad. I really started out with 48K in Fortran. All right, our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's up?
My question is, I run both Internet Explorer and Google Chrome. I was wondering, why is the Explorer, when I go from site to site, a lot slower than the Chrome on the same machine?
That's one of the points of Chrome, is that they wrote the program specifically to be faster and more efficient than Internet Explorer.
Oh, it always is quicker?
Yes, yes, it is. That's why so many people are giving up on Internet Explorer and moving to Chrome, because Chrome is just faster. It uses less memory, and it seems to work better for most people.
And that's, Microsoft is fighting back with the new Edge browser. It's supposed to be leaner and quicker again.
But it apparently is not.
Not quite. What's interesting, though, is that was the initial point of Firefox, too, to be leaner and faster than Chrome. But there's so many cool add-ons to Firefox and Chrome that you can make it just as slow as IE if you wanted to.
No.
Right.
So you recommend Chrome over the Explorer?
Always. It's also much more secure.
Oh, okay.
But occasionally,
you're welcome.
Occasionally, you will find websites that require Internet Explorer.
Lazy programmers.
We were talking about earlier. Yep, lazy programmers they don't want to take advantage.
Take the time to do it right.
Yeah, do it right or don't do it at all.
Yeah,
and every once in a while you'll run into a site that says this site best viewed in Internet Explorer and. The government...
Very few of them.
Yeah, the...
worth
the IRS website back in the day said not only that you must use Internet Explorer, it actually checked to see what browser you were using. If it was not Internet Explorer, it sent you to another site, another page. It said not only must you use Internet Explorer, but then it would put up a little ruler and say, and this must be the width of your window. Seriously?
Yeah.
What the living heck?
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It's the IRS. They're much better now. I'm much better now.
That was a big thing in the early days of the web, too. When 13-inch screens were common, and then 15, then 17.
Yep.
So when, as a web designer, what size screen do you design for? And the answer is all of them, of course. Mm-hmm. But they didn't. So you're on a 15-inch screen and need a little tiny window because it assumed 13, or it assumes a 17 and you can't see all the stuff.
Yeah,
right.
It's off the screen because you got a small one.
Right, and that's where responsive programming, GUIs came in.
But now the average screen is 20, 24-inch.
Well, but more importantly...
But we're back to laptops.
Not just laptops, but phones.
Yeah, yep. And tablets.
You can have a 5-inch phone, a 4-inch phone, a 3-inch phone, a 7-inch tablet.
But it's got the same number of pixels as an old 30-inch monitor.
Right.
It's got 4,000 pixels across the top of the screen.
Right. And so there's an issue there. Also, do you actually design for a phone held upright or sideways? Also,
or
people,
both.
For God's sake, stop taking movies with your phone upright.
Vertical video syndrome.
Vertical video syndrome, VVS. It should be landscape only. Never take video vertically.
Plus, it's a tall building.
I need a button. Stop taking.
Yeah, but no, there's some incidences where you'd use it vertically.
Yeah, but it should be the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, I agree.
I actually won't watch videos that are just, badly. I mean, everybody, 99.999999% of the people out there are not videographers. I really do get that. But there are things you can do to mitigate your crappiness.
Oh, hell yeah.
and people need
to... Just putting it politely.
Just start out with turning it sideways. Turn the...
It's not hard.
Sideways.
It's easy to hold.
It's easy to hold.
It's as you're panning around or whatever.
Yep.
Got two hands on it instead of one.
You see more. You see better stuff. It's just a better deal. Vertical video syndrome is a terrible, sad, horrible thing. Don't be guilty of it. Let's see. Another. Oh, this is a security thing. Interestingly, I have multiple categories of news on Ask Nick. And the one that seems to be the most watched, the most read, is security, which is a good thing. But I'm pleased to see it. Anyway, not long ago, Symantec revealed that it has issued bogus security certificates for numerous web domains, including Google's. And as you might guess, Google isn't happy. Google is warning Symantec that any Symantec certificates which don't meet its transparency policy may create warnings and problems in Google's products. That is, they'd be deemed insecure. Moreover, it's asking Symantec to explain why it didn't catch some of the fake certificates, the causes behind each slip-up, and the steps it'll take to set things right. Not surprisingly, Google doesn't want malicious sites posing as someone else, especially not Google, in order to deliver malware or perpetuate phishing scams. For its part, Symantec claims that it issued a small number of test certificates by mistake and revoked them before notifying those affected. It also fired a handful of staff who reportedly weren't following guidelines. There's a good chance this won't happen again. However, Symantec also appears to be downplaying the scope of the problem. Google notes that it found dodgy certificates after the first time Symantec examined its behavior, and Symantec's second audit caught an over 2,600 of them. 2,600 of them. That doesn't sound small to us. While the two companies aren't bitter enemies, it could be a long while before they get back into each other's good books. If you can't trust Symantec, who can you trust? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
That's another thing Google Chrome does, is it's really picky about, you know, security certificates on Google's own websites.
Yeah.
They tend to find a lot of these bogus certificates because so many people use Google services.
Yep. Google really is pretty good about that, you know. A lot of companies are fairly lax, like, oh, let's say Symantec. But Google is not. And can you imagine, Symantec is a security company.
They bought VeriSign, which was the leading and most expensive security certificate provider.
Well, and this is where the problems were. So it's a pretty terrible thing that's happened here. Basically, what they've done is they've allowed people to buy certificates that let them pretend to be other companies, including Google.
And part of the way that happens is a lot of the certificate process has been automated.
Right.
So you don't have to convince a person. You just have to convince a computer, which is usually easier.
That's like the guy who for a couple of hours owned Google.com.
Yeah.
Google just screwed up in re-upping it, re-registering it. And this guy who used to work for Google and just happened to still be running a program, forgot he'd been running it, that checked for that, saw it and thought, let me grab this right now. He did, renewed it, called Google and said, you guys screwed up. I've got it. I'm giving it back to you.
Yep.
And so he didn't ask for money. He didn't ask for, you know, he was just a nice guy. Google did pay him an undisclosed sum.
For them to lose that, because he could have.
But they do have bug bounties.
They do have bug bounties.
Yeah, that's pretty big bug.
Yeah.
Pretty enormous bug. Yeah. So, yeah, he came out, you know, honesty, the best policy. He came out fine with that one. But it is the kind of thing we worried about. I've written a program that reminds me when any of the...
I get emails that my domain's about to expire.
Yeah, they do pretty well now, yeah. But yes, I get emails that say my domain is about to expire,
and
then I look and it's like a year. It will expire in a year. Yes, that's true. Thank you for reminding me, but I'll do this on my own. Thanks so much.
Sure, they get some magazine subscription notices like that. There's a year left. You want to renew now? No, I just renewed.
Right.
There's a year left.
Well, and that's
no,
the
but
thing.
Really, do you want to renew now?
And so far, you know what? If Ed McMahon's not going to come to my door with a $10 million check, I'm not renewing. How's that sound?
Yeah.
That's the way that's going to work. But, yeah, it's, you know, we're at the point now.
Here the Jazz 90.1 Club Calendar Highlight.
Sorry about that.
Wrong button.
Yeah. Dave is just.
That's the button.
Playing around. There we go. Well, clearly, that's my cue to shut the heck up. Thank you, Dave. Very subtle.
Sorry about that. When I was trying to do a couple other things here, and I got a little click.
That's it for another edition of Soundbites. Again, thanks so much to all those of you who were generous enough and kind enough and concerned enough about the future of this show to become members of the station and to help us meet our $50,000 goal. We're back to not begging anymore, and so we're going to tell you, do not go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week long. He's loaded down with albums and CDs and Michael. He's carrying Michael on his back. You don't want to see this. It's not a good thing to see. But we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Soundbites, member supported and very grateful. Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.